Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to Geekscape Book Club. Very excited to be back after a bit of a summer hiatus. As always, I am Christian Blatt, and today we are talking about Secret Invasion. If you watch our show, Marvel Movie Talk on Geekscape, you know we spent way too much time each week breaking down the TV show Secret Invasion. Fortunately for us and all of you, we're talking about the comic book Secret Invasion, the original series from 2008. Joining me is Garrett Briones. Garrett, thank you for being here. You actually were on our most recent episode back in June where we discussed Flashpoint.
Had a great time doing that. Thank you for having me back, Christian. I love talking comics and I love doing it on the Geekscape platform. So it was just a perfect time to come back.
Absolutely. And someone who has been known at various points in his life as the Flashpoint is also with us, the one, the only, Mr. Eric Connor. Thank you both for being here today. Now, I was reading Secret Invasion for the first time. Is that the case for you, Eric, as well?
I read some of it. That's what I realized. Because okay. Civil War fed right into this, right?
I'm correct. Just, yeah. I had read Civil War somewhere in the last, like, not quite decade, but after the movie, you know, after the I wanted to read it. So that was when I read that. But anyway, so you'd read some of this.
Yeah, I think Civil War was one of those sort of limited run things that I really was into. And so I remember going through all of that, getting all of the spinoffs, everything, and then started getting into the Secret Invasion. But I don't think I got very far. Like, in fact, the first issue I'm reading this, I'm like, oh, shoot, I think I own this. I bought it on Amazon. And then but as I read, I realized, no, I don't, it's not tracking.
You just remembered some of it. But now, Garrett, you were all in on Secret Invasion. In fact, you needed to actually dust off your old storage locker to get your hands on the actual issues that you already owned, correct?
Yes. I was a kid when Secret Invasion was coming out, and I remember the advertising in a bunch of magazines. Like, I would get magazines that would be tangentially related to comics, and they had my trade actually has the they had some of them, like, Embrace Change, and it would be, like, a human hand in a scroll hand, or, like, a scroll couple, like a man, a scroll male, and a, like, all those things. And so I didn't have a comic book shop when I was a kid or in my hometown. So I had an issue. I think I got it when we were on, like, a beach trip, where it was issue 2 of Secret Invasion, and you'd flip it over and it was New Avengers 41, which is also written by Brian Michael Bendis. And it tied into the event. And so I had that. And then about a few years ago, maybe 2012, 2013, I got my hands on the trade paperback, and I read it all those years ago. So it's been a while. I had to reread it to refresh myself. Yeah. It's been a good minute.
Yeah, I read it digitally, but it sounds like it was the same collection that you read, because you did have some of those ads. Like, there's, you know, a group of human kids with a Skrull kid, and everybody's having fun. Oh, you know,
I mean, by the way, I went over really to the site. It's Embrace Change is it's not active anymore. I'm sorry to tell you.
Oh man. So we shouldn't embrace the change.
Guess not.
And we can question
or at least buy the URL. I mean, I guess we all can maybe chip in a few bucks. I'm sure Marvel would be like, oh, yeah.
We can question whether or not he loves us. You know, there's a lot of doubt. Yeah. So, I mean, it is kind of it's an interesting conceit, you know, this idea that not only are Skrulls among us, they've been here for some time, you know. And look, you can tidy up some continuity that way, you know, like, oh, this Elektra, yeah, it's a Skrull, so not really dead, you know. And you can you definitely deal with a lot of stuff in that way. There were definitely some moments. Some of it had happened leading into this event. Now, I was well aware that there were numerous crossovers and tie-ins. I did not read those. I would have liked to have had time, and maybe if it was as simple as, like, click this link here to go to that issue, you know, but it was just reading the trade paperback online. But I feel like it's boy, when you start getting bogged down in some of those crossovers, I mean, the big event series, the first one that I lived through, like buying new comics month to month, was Secret Wars 2. I mean, I began reading comics around the time of the first Secret Wars. We're talking about the original in 1984 into 85, I think. But that didn't actually have all the tie-ins and crossovers. Well, Secret Wars, they were like, you basically got to buy everything that comes out in the next year, because at some point everything's going to cross over. So I think that that's important to note, that I didn't feel like, oh, I'm missing huge things. You know, when I've admitted that I read Crisis on Infinite Earths for the first time only a few years ago, and there's also numerous crossovers to that, but that collection definitely doesn't make you feel like, but where did the Blue Devil go? Yeah. Do you care? Because if you don't care, then it's fine. You know, so it's not gonna, you know, all the important stuff happens in the pages of the main event. But so you had read it, Garrett, about somewhere around 10 years ago.
Yes.
What did you think reading it now and sort of being reminded of, like, oh, I think differently about this than when I would have read it, you know, a decade ago or whenever exactly that was?
So rereading it, I did it yesterday. I wanted it to be as close to the show as possible. I remembered this era of Marvel was always one of my favorites. I always just, Bucky Barnes as Captain America. Thor had just come back a few years prior. Michael Straczynski had brought him back with Olivier Coipel. And then post-Civil War, pre the Dark Reign that is set up at the end of this this book, I did feel a certain sense of nostalgia. But then I would say, you know, and I love Lanil Francis Yu. He's one of my absolute favorite artists. This book is gorgeous. At the height of his powers. I think for me, the biggest thing that I've always felt with Secret Invasion is just, I think it starts very strong. And then I just think very structurally, I don't want to say falls apart, but for me, I think it almost feels like a tale of two stories when it just kind of becomes another, well, we're going to punch each other in Central Park. And then the last issue is, I had forgotten the last issue being very, and then this is what happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, right. And now we're here. I didn't remember the issue being like that. I just thought it was more of the fight.
I have to agree that the sudden narrative shift, that the last part is told from a different point of view than what we had had previously, you know,
and it's almost like that.
And that almost works like if it had happened for an issue in the middle, and it's like, we're going to focus on this character and this one, but it's like, we're going to tidy it up. And it's almost like, well, why did you use that device? You know, it was a little jarring when I was first reading it, actually, because of course you're like, wait, who's this? You know, I mean, you figure it out, but it's when it's not immediately apparent. Yeah. Go ahead.
And if I can piggyback on that for a sec. So, it also happens around the time, and slight spoiler alert, one of the, maybe I won't say the name, but one of the major characters dies.
And you mean in this book or in Civil War?
Oh, no, I'm so sorry. In this, like in the last.
No. Because Civil War ends with Captain America being shot.
Right.
And that, of course, directly ties into this, because it's like, that wasn't really him. That was
Yeah.
But anyway, back to your
point. Well, actually,
it's a lead dream.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead, Garrett.
Captain America did, the one that was shot on the steps did die, but he was actually dislodged in time by a time bullet. That's a whole different thing.
Time bullet.
At least there was a reason that made sense, Garrett.
Yes.
Yeah. that old time bullet, man, it's taken down many a great man. Yeah.
That's a funny thing, is that both Batman and Captain America died around the same time, and it was a special magic bullet that dislodged them in time. It just happened to line
the war in
this magic bullet from this magic grassy knoll that just happened to be right over. Yeah, it's all right.
Woody Harrelson's dad was involved with the death of both Batman and Captain America.
Right, exactly.
I think what it did, though, because I noticed that as well, it actually hurt that scene. And again, I'm being careful because I'm not sure if we want to spoil who gets,
you know, look, this book is so old that, you know, if somebody's watching us talk about it and they're inspired to read it, I think that's great. But also when characters die in continuity, it's not so much a spoiler anymore because they always figure out ways from there. Like they figured out a way to have Mar-Vell in this. And he's like the one character that they always try to keep him dead and come up with other ways. And I think that they've stayed true to that, you know, but at the same time, it's like, well, if we need a character, we're just going to borrow them from some point. But so if you want to make the point about a character who died in this series 15 years ago, I think it's okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. So sorry, y'all, for the five people who might, this might shock, but Janet dies in kind of a really fascinating fashion. And I think because of the narrative shift, it actually hurt that moment because that moment is really powerful. That's, they even put in the description, one of the original Avengers, right? You know, that this is a legacy character. And I found like, the problem sometimes, right, when you make a stylistic narrative choice like that, is it can actually get in the way of the emotion. And I found like that moment was really visual. I mean, Garrett, I think you're totally right. The art, even in that whole sequence, is fascinating, largely because I'm trying to figure out what am I looking at. Like I kept, and I can't say I was flipping back at my iPad right here, so I kept, you know, swiping in and out and zooming in. But I found like by doing that shift, it's like you're robbing us of like the moment kind of after that, you know, think how powerful it is in Infinity War, you know, Spider-Man turns into dust, but staying with Tony for the moment after that is the thing that really hits us, you know? And so I think like that was the problem is you do a narrative shift, whatever, but when you have a moment like that, like it actually hampered it a little bit.
It's a great point because we should be getting it from the point of view of multiple people, maybe even everyone who's there, but instead we're getting one specific point of view and it's not Hank Pym's point of view. You know, I mean, it's not
just
it's
very
not
even, cold and analytical. It's just matter of fact, this is what happened during the fight. It's not the characters in the moment like, oh my gosh, a founding Avenger, one of my closest friends, you know, some Thor was also a founding Avenger. He's the one who has to get rid of her. You know, that would, if we could have been with Thor more in that moment, even that it just did not work with what was happening, you know, and it didn't jive with the seven previous issues that had nothing like that.
I definitely I agree, and that scene in particular is a great representation of why that choice didn't work as well for me. I don't think it ruins the ending, but you feel like you would have been able to get so much more out of it. In true, you know, superhero story fashion, there are some great big, what we would call set pieces, you know, really, really big fight scenes and stuff. And they don't only take place in New York City. They also take place in the Savage Land. Mm-hmm. And this was an image that Eric had sent to me because anytime that Phoenix is fighting a dinosaur while, you know, everybody else, you know, it's fun to look at. And I think that the sequence works very well. Mm-hmm. But I do have to say that reading it, it's like, and I know we're supposed to be confused, but when characters are talking to other versions of themselves and you don't know if either, you know, which one's a Skrull, maybe they're both Skrulls. This idea that they're trying to convince Tony he's a Skrull, but he isn't, you know, and then of course, as you read it, you're like, or is he? I think the confusion works in that way. It's just some of the character interactions. I'm like, I don't even know what to think about this Wolverine talking to that Wolverine, you know, but maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just slow. Garrett, what did you think sort of reading that where you had multiple versions of the same characters squaring off in the Savage Land?
I loved it. Yeah. Like I said, issue two was the issue I had where this big battle mostly takes place. And so I read that thing, you know, the book was so weathered after all, I haven't seen that book in years. I know it's somewhere in my other comic book storage, but, I love that sequence. Yes, I think it's very easy to tell that. I'm going to assume that the Wolverine that looks like his first appearance in Incredible Hulk, I'm going to assume that's probably not my Wolverine. Like, I do like using the classic outfits. And I think especially I had forgotten with because I've read issue two so many times, I thought in my head, I was like, oh yeah, you know, Bobby Morse, Mockingbird, she's a human along with the Skrulls, so that I completely forgot when issues later the other shoe of that drops. And it was like, no, she actually was a Skrull, and she was that good that she believed that she was the real Bobby Morse, even knowing about that October 12th date.
Yeah.
That made that moment hit a lot harder. And to the only tie-in I've ever read, I said, was New Avengers 41, which I wanted just to give a little spotlight on that issue because it is really, really good. It features when everybody gets thrown out of whack when that T-Rex attacks, Spider-Man gets thrown aside, and he ends up on an adventure with Kazar and Shauna, the She-Devil of the Savage Land. And it's them and their tribe going up against the Skrull Captain America. And you see flashbacks to the Skrull Captain America being chosen, being indoctrinated, having his memories change. And it's just him on a Captain America-esque, like, one man stand against this army, just, you know, freaking out, saying that he's Captain America, until they eventually drop him with all these blow darts and he turns back to his Skrull form. And I just always remember this image of him foaming at the mouth in his green, you know, he's his Skrull form, but he's still wearing the Captain America outfit. And he's just freaking out on the ground after he's lost, just saying, I'm Steve Rogers. I'm a male. I'm a super soldier. I'm an Avenger. All these things. I love everything that happens in the Savage Land. Maybe we stay there a little bit too long issue, you know, layout wise, but I really enjoyed that battle in the Savage Land.
Yeah, no, I think the Savage Land is, always a great backdrop. Obviously, the new X-Men went there previously. You know, this the all new, all different new X-Men. During the height of the Phoenix Saga, pre-Dark Phoenix, obviously, in the Roy Thomas, Neil Adams run, they went there as well. You know, and it is an interesting idea that it's like, down in Antarctica, there is the Savage Land. And I think from what you're describing, that does sound like it would be particularly interesting. There's definitely things that you can tell. There's even a reference of like, yeah, you guys get out of here. I think Shanna's just going to take care of whoever's left. You know, you could tell like, all right, that probably continued that story there. I don't know. Eric, did you get any kind of feeling that, they were setting up things that you were like, oh, I'd be interested in this? Or did you feel like it's all right? I've gotten enough for maybe it's for the sake of doing this for the show that, you're like, well, I've now bought this digitally. I can't, I'm not reading this in real time where I could just go, in terms of publication, I just go back to the comic shop and pick up a couple of tie-in issues. Or did you feel like you were missing out on some of that stuff, Eric?
Well, I mean, first of all, Garrett, I'm very sad that a young Garrett didn't have a comic book shop locally. And I feel like we might need an episode of this just dedicated to how you, despite that, persevered and became the gentleman you are today, the knowledgeable gentleman and scholar that you are today. It really is interesting when you read this one on its own, because it's really kind of like almost like a meat and potato kind of storytelling. Like, it gets just to it. Like, we don't take many left or right turns. We're sort of barreling straight ahead. And so, Garrett, what you just pitched as you're describing it, I'm like, actually put on my computer. I'm like, huh, I would like to read that issue now. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was kind of unique because, right, when we read this after the fact, you know, you are just reading sort of the center of the storm, but with the understanding that the winds took characters all sorts of places. And I think this works pretty well overall as its own thing. You know, as I'm reading this, I didn't find myself asking a lot of these like sort of dangling thread questions. So I think it actually, as an 8-issue collection, you could read it. And let's say you only read this and nothing else, you'd be fine. But it's kind of like how MCU has been using the TV shows as almost like, well, you can keep coming in the movies without ever watching those shows and you'd be all right. But if you actually hang out and watch the show, like if you actually watch WandaVision, then that one little sort of tossed aside line about, it's not about New Jersey. Don't worry about New Jersey.
Yeah.
It's actually a pretty remarkable adventure. But you could actually watch Doctor Strange without really getting hung up on that moment. And I felt the same thing here. I wasn't necessarily hung up on the moments where you could sort of see, okay, now we could branch off here, especially because we're in so many different parts of this sort of universe. We have so many different characters. They have to repeatedly almost remind you where you are and who you're with, because it's a very epic tale. But yeah, I didn't feel like I was missing out on something just by reading these eight together.
Right. I think that the key is, you know, sort of the Disney Plus model is a good one in terms of things that are supplemental but not essential. Reading about this in the time that it was published, Marvel's website had e-comics. There was a Secret Invasion prologue, which was 7 pages. And then the best part of this fact, and the reason I bring it up, was Secret Invasion Home Invasion, which was, remember, this is 2008, a MySpace video blog featuring a young teenager named Kinsey Walden and her fears regarding her brother's strange behavior. And there was a accompanying comic book. So I love the idea that it was, you know, let's utilize MySpace, you know, because, of course, you know, at that point, to have a Facebook account, I believe you still had to have a .edu email address. Take a quick detour, because one of our great friends from Marvel, Marvel Movie Talk, I almost said the name of a different show.
Happy birthday.
Great to see Cam A. Egan spending some time with us. We're talking Secret Invasion. I'm definitely intrigued in some of the supplemental, but because of the fact that I'm reading this in a bit of a vacuum, at a point that I'm loosely familiar with what was going on in continuity, mostly because I had read Civil War, and I did read some tie-ins along with that. My friend that had loaned me the issues had sent me some of the tie-ins as well. So I knew a little bit, but I was just like, oh, Norman Osborn. Okay, I guess we'll just roll with that, as that's a normal thing. You know, he hasn't been dead since 1972. Mm-hmm. We're just going to, you know, and I did know. I mean, I've read more recent comics. You know, I do know that he spends time, but I'm like, oh, he's running the Thunderbolts. Okay, I can't say I was up to speed on that. You know, mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of catch up anyway. So I felt like if I had gotten bogged down in the stuff I didn't understand, and I was, you know, trying to, you know, if I was looking everything up, if I was Googling like, wait, what's going on here? You know, I would have never finished the story in time to do the show. But I do feel like this
point, you would have, Christian, you would have ignored your children.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Cami Egan says she enjoyed the comic and she's reading the rest of the series. Look, I don't want to dwell on it too much, but this is a big event. It has all these characters that you are familiar with, and some that you might not. You know, someone Garrett's age when you read it at the time. Maybe, you know, although Jessica Drew had come back as Spider-Woman at that point, but I'm using her as an example that, you know, younger readers might not have been as familiar with her. There were newer characters that I didn't know particularly well. You know, we see Cassie Lang at one point. You know, there's stuff that I know now, but if I had just picked one of these up at the time. So I think that they do a decent job of like, you're going to get a little bit lost, but we promise you're not going to get too in the weeds on anything. And you'll be able to get, you know, as long as you understand the concept of the Skrulls, you know, you should be able to understand this book, right, Garrett?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, even speaking to that, like, yeah, this book, I would say, was my introduction to a lot of, you know, by that point, I already knew, you know, Spider-Man's been my guy since I could form a word. You know, I was already into Captain America, Wolverine, you know, those big heavy hitters. But sure. I think when I was a kid, this is definitely my, if not my first introduction, maybe, you know, maybe seeing these characters like Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, you know, when I was a kid, and they depict her look that she doesn't really use at all with the pink hair as a kid, I had no idea who that was. But there was a lot of, you know, I think it was my introduction to the Sentry, all these different people. And I,
yeah.
And then even the Young Avengers, even though they only have like a cameo at the end of the second issue, it did definitely get me intrigued. Like, who are these characters? And so I sought out, you know, I had a Marvel encyclopedia that explains who some of the Young Avengers at the time were. But even that one was outdated because they had, you know, characters like Speed, who wasn't yet really a thing, but he's a thing in this book. So this book, definitely one of the values of a big event book is that they bring in everybody. Everybody's got to have, you know, their own panel. So I got introduced to so many people that I wouldn't have had a chance to prior.
Right. Yeah. I think that it is kind of the importance with any kind of ongoing continuity. I mean, it's a little bit harder with these major events, but the idea is always that any new issue that comes out is going to be somebody's first issue. Yeah. So you do want to recap things, but at the same time, you're like, well, you can't spend too much time on the recap. So, you know, a lot of it is people will figure it out as they go along, you know. But, you know, I think that we don't need to spend too much time on it. But, Eric, I know that do you want to talk about sort of what I was teeing us up on was this idea that this gave us the characters we cared about. They were able to do this on a grand scale. And when they weren't going to be able to deliver a TV show that worked in this way, they probably shouldn't have done it, I guess. I mean, they could have told a different story. You know, but I guess you have the IP, you have Secret Invasion as the phrase, people know it, and you'd already announced it. So you're like, well, let's just roll with that. I mean, in a loose way, yes, that is that is what the story told. It was a, you know, a secret invasion of Skrulls using what they set up. But I don't know, in a lot of ways, it just would never have worked with the MCU universe because of, you know, the characters that we don't have, you know, that whether the it's that Disney doesn't have the rights to, or they just haven't introduced yet. You know, the only Mockingbird we ever got on TV was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So it's entirely questionable as to whether or not that counts. And I know Ivan Soto is usually in our chat on our regular show. He'd be very upset that we could even cast aspersions onto whether or not Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is canon, but it's hard to make a case that it is, in all honesty. But what's your thought on that? Let's just spend a quick moment and we'll get right back to the book, Eric.
Yeah, Garrett, I don't know if you sat through the Secret Invasion show or not.
Oh, you're not on the Geekscape text thread.
Okay. Yeah, we're all survivors here. Well, it's all scar tissue that you're looking at, especially with me. Much more so than them. I'm so glad I did not read this before watching that show. And again, I knew Secret Invasion. Like I said, I think I'd read a couple of the issues of it, especially because Civil War really pulled me back into comic book reading for a good chunk of time there. It's amazing, like some of the panels I pulled out, even the ones like the ships coming to Earth, that battle in the Savage Lands with the dinosaur. You know, these are such, I mean, they're set pieces. They're you know, the stuff that made us, you know, comic book fans. I mean, you know, for us, you know, for Christian and I, like we read this or saw this when we were considerably older. But, you know, imagining, you know, Garrett, like you're describing being a kid reading in this, us with Secret Wars 1. You know, and that sort of scale and scope. And the second we saw it was going to be a TV show, it's like, okay, well, it couldn't have that scale. The frustrating thing, though, is just the term invasion. This was an invasion. I mean, even the one that I don't think I sent you a panel from, Christian, but when they basically had the virus affect everything, affects Tony's suit, affects Avenger Tower. Like affects the shield carrier, you know, like I think like that for me as a set piece was incredible, was just seeing how the entire world was turning to crap. Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff where I'm like, well, that's an invasion, right?
Right.
The epic scale of this is throughout the storytelling. But also,
let me just interject. I mean, that's a big problem when you're telling the story in a universe where you don't have Tony Stark anymore and you never had Reed Richards, you know, because they're such an important part of this story and honestly, so many others, you know.
But you can make it work, even if the Fantastic Four X-Men are not on the table yet. This could, I mean, this really could have been the next great Marvel, you know, phase. This, the build up to a Secret Invasion where how do you top all the heroes together against all of Thanos' crew, well, them against themselves could have been, you know, a remarkable thing to sort of top that. But, you know, now they blew it. I mean, like Secret Invasion came out and left us all kind of numb. And that is the last thing I felt when I was reading this was numb.
Yeah, no, I agree. And look, there's definitely a lot of cool moments, you know, when you have sort of the reemergence of the heroes. You know, Garrett, you referenced Luke Cage. I like the interaction between, you know, the Luke Cage, the more modern Luke Cage that we're familiar with, and then he's face to face with 70s Luke Cage is like, what's all this, you know? And I don't know, there's definitely a lot of little moments like that. When you were rereading it yesterday, Garrett, were there things that jumped out as in like, oh yeah, I hadn't thought about this because, you know, I read it 10 years ago. Were there little interactions or even, you know, big character scenes that you were like, oh, this really stands out, you know, where maybe it didn't sit in your memory when you thought back on the story, but reading it again yesterday, you're just like, oh yeah, these interactions are pretty great.
I think one of the MVPs for me, I've always been a big Fantastic Four guy. So I loved how much of a role Reed Richards had. And I love how steeped in continuity it is that one, obviously there is the, you know, they keep talking about how this is prophecy. They've been told by their prophets, this is what they need to do, especially this book. Not only comes off the back of Civil War, but it comes off of Marvel's Annihilation event that really revitalized their space and their cosmic books. And it in that book, the Skrull Empire is they are really badly hit by the Annihilation wave. And so it obviously comes off the back of that they need a new home, all these things. But I just love that the Skrulls are so petty that they still that a good reason why they're doing this is because early on in the Fantastic Four, you know, the Kirby Stan Lee days, Reed Richards turned some Skrulls into cows and just mind wiped them. And they just thought they were cows and that they rightfully so. I would be kind of mad too if someone did that to you know, sentient beings. They, you know, completely changed that. I just love that. And yeah, I loved getting Reed in there. And I enjoyed Abigail Brand. I always enjoy when she shows up. I think that character is, I think she's a little underutilized a lot. And so I loved her one woman mission, you know, talking about how she knows how to speak Skrull, but she's not very good at it. So she's kind of having to wing it. I would say those two, I very much enjoyed their little side mission to get him to get Reed back into the main story.
Garrett, actually, I had a quick question about Agent Brand. So I actually did a little homework on her. So she started in, was it the Joss Whedon run of X-Men?
Yes. Yes.
Astonishing X-Men, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Was there a spinoff from this involving her? Because I was so into how she got introduced. And then this moment here that you're sharing, Christian, where I've never seen Reed look worse than he did in this one panel where he's just looks like he got hit with a steamroller or something.
Look, sometimes after a certain age, you need to put your face on before you see the public.
Oh, this would be 5 minutes before we go live.
Yeah, I mean, Garrett doesn't have to deal with this, but Garrett, for the rest of us.
But Garrett, was there an Agent Brand storyline separate from this, if you remember?
She's always shown up in a lot of things. She has romantically been linked to Hank McCoy, the Beast, many times. So she's popped up in many X-Men books. There was a Sword book a few years ago written by Al Ewing. She heavily featured in that because anytime Sword shows up, Abigail Brand is there, except in the MCU, funny enough. But yeah, she featured heavily in that. She's also featuring heavily in the X-Men Red book right now, also written by Al Ewing. I would say that those are some recent books that she definitely has popped up in a lot. I don't think she's ever had her own solo series, but she always pops up in Sword series or when Sword is featured.
Yeah, I even noticed her abilities listed was pyrokinesis, and then my favorite, multilingualism. So it's like the idea, okay, I can control fire, and I know how to speak Yiddish. I think that's a hell of a skill.
Yeah, I would agree.
What I like is, you know, this is one of those, you know, there's so many characters that are present and are involved, but in some ways you don't see a lot of them. Like, I loved the fact that, you know, Luke needs a favor. So, you know, he's getting help from somebody, and it's Cloak from Cloak and Dagger, who's like, yeah, I'll take you here, but I'm not helping you steal Tony Stark's jet. And I was just like, oh, I mean, I was in the 80s, I was a big reader of Cloak and Dagger. I always found them to be interesting. You know, it was a very dark series, you know, sort of, you know, they did a little anesthetization of their backstory, you know, where it's just, you know, some synthetic heroin leads to the creation of them, but then it turned out they were mutants. But anyway, so I liked that. But a character that we get early on, or at least we think we get, but it turns out to be a Skrull, is somebody that some of us have discovered because of the MCU. I'm, of course, speaking of Countess Valentina Allegra de Fontaine, who on the big screen and the small screen is Julie Louis-Dreyfus. I thought, let's see, when did we first see her? It was in the Falcon and Winter Soldier series. So if I had read this before that, it wouldn't have registered. You know, it would be right up there with Abigail Brand and like a character I don't know. And, we get some classics like Dum Dum Dugan, you know, who predates the Marvel Universe, you know, from the Howling Commando, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, just some of the key people who've been replaced by Skrulls, you know, Jarvis, the Avengers butler. It's like, well, yeah, that's you definitely want to get him early, you know, because just the unfettered access. And so, you know, feel free to, as we go along, either of you just jump in with any characters that you were glad to see. I was a little confused on the timeline with Carol Danvers, who was back to being Ms. Marvel at this point, but not yet Captain Marvel.
Yes.
And then there's after Binary, you know, from the X-Men. I know she had a couple other iterations. But that's all right. It's, you know, it didn't take away from the story. There are characters that I like seeing her, Jessica Drew, you know, all of them. But one of the things I wanted to talk about was that, at least to me, and maybe it's an Italian issue, Reed Richards is like, oh, yeah, I figured out how they're able to hide the fact that they're Skrulls. And that's when we learned that Hank Pym was a Skrull. So he tries to take him out. But did they explain it and I just missed it? Because I was just like, well, yeah, what did he figure out? Am I dumb? You can say
it. He got like a magic gun at one point, right?
Yeah, I think he just, I do agree that I don't think it's ever clearly articulated. Yeah. It is just kind of like, oh, I figured it out. It's just a cloaking thing, but it's never like, okay, but what is it?
I figured it out and I can counteract it. And
yeah,
I don't know. Look, sometimes you don't need it, but like on Star Trek, they usually take a moment to go like, all right, look, this is going to be some bullshit right here, but we're going to say a bunch of words. We're going to tell you how it happened so that we've at least addressed that maybe this doesn't make sense. And then it's just like, Reed's like, oh, I figured it out. But, and this gun will counteract. You know, so,
it's the line from The Martian. I'm going to science that. And then swore. I never know what Geekscape if I'm allowed to swear or not, to be honest.
I mean, I swear too much. So if you're cautious, it probably negates my potty mouth. Let's get this question in from Cammy Egan. I may not have caught the reference, but a few times a character says he loves you. What was the significance of this? I'm glad you asked this because I referenced it earlier. I think it's a good reveal as to what that is because, you know, I'm first reading it. I'm like, all right, they're talking about like a Skrull emperor, the super Skrull. Like, what is it exactly? Like, who's in charge, you know? And I mean, it's the fact that they believe it's God. Like, this is their religious cause of taking over the earth. Talk a little bit about sort of that reveal for you, Garrett, as you're reading it. Now, then, whenever you want to talk about it.
Yeah, I had actually forgot that this was it was the driving force. And I really liked it in the sense that I can't remember exactly which issue it is, but it's early on when they're explaining to the world why they're taking over. And they're saying like, well, you know, humanity, all they ever do is they just take over a place. They colonize it. They just take it over. But we're going to eliminate stuff like that by doing the exact same thing. It really is like the idea of like manifest destiny, this idea, you know, early America, they thought that, you know, it was their God given right to the land. Like it is what God intends for us.
It's manifest destiny. It's the Crusades, you know,
yes.
It's this idea of, well, God told me I need to do this, you know, and God's on our side. And when you believe that, believe that there's nothing that can stop you, you know. So, I thought it was a nicely done reveal. Eric, what did you think about this idea that, you know, that God was on their side, the Skrulls?
I like that they withheld that exactly what the who he is for quite a while. I mean, I don't think they actually name checked God until issue 7 or 8 on this
one. It was pretty late in the series. I agree.
And I think it adds to this mystery of like, okay, so who is their leader? And we keep waiting to sort of meet them. And we understand that the Skrull, Jessica Drew. I was about to say Jones, but it's not her. Right. Well, yeah. Skrull.
There's a reason for that confusion because Jessica Jones was supposed to be Jessica Drew having thrown in the towel. And then someone somewhere in editorial was like, you can't do that to that character. Oh, you mean that character that nobody cares about anymore? You're literally not doing anything with the character who lost her superpowers. But anyway, I digress.
Sorry, I didn't mean to touch a nerve on there.
No. Sometimes I pull out a thread.
You need a minute. We can step out for a second, come back, and cool down.
Let me talk more about Jessica. No,
real talk with Christian.
Yeah.
So Jessica Drew is like the queen, basically.
Yes.
And exactly. So then we're thinking like, okay, well, you know, it's the moment in Empire Strikes Back where we think of Darth Vader as sort of the big bad, and then he's kneeling in front of an emperor we don't meet for another movie. Mm-hmm. And I think here that I kept expecting, right? Okay, who's going to be he wins the reveal. And then the idea that it's God, it was actually pretty fascinating because you're right. It then makes it, then you can connect this to, unfortunately, so many moments in human history, including recent history. You don't have to go back very far. You don't have to go back to the Crusades to link it to something that, unfortunately, we got going on in our universe in 2023. So, no, I thought that was an interesting choice and a powerful one.
Eric, as a veteran of the Cola Wars in the late 80s, I know that anytime the conflict comes up, it always takes you back to those days.
To quote Guns N' Roses, what's so civil about war anyhow, Cola or otherwise?
Exactly. I think that we're talking about all these characters. And for our visual audience, I'm just looking over my shoulder and I'm seeing the 70s Luke Cage and, the iteration of Wonder Man that I like where he's got the red jacket on, you know, and look, there's times where Jean Grey, it's like, well, you know, you're not the Phoenix anymore, but that was the coolest costume you ever had. So just go ahead and wear it and we'll figure it out, you know, It's it's interesting when the X-Men are kind of ancillary characters in here, but I like that there's so many toys in the sandbox that they're playing with that we get to look at. I know Eric, you sent a number of images and one that I feel like you shared just because I'm going to assume it made you laugh is this exchange between Tony and Natasha, and he's saying they could have killed me, she had me, and Natasha says they could have killed you with a poison matzo ball before you went to bed. Is that why you pulled that, because of the idea that it was a poison matzo ball? Is that
it brought up so many questions, and then I was like, wait, but is Tony Jewish? And I know, listen,
I don't know,
non-Jews love matzo balls. I get
I love matzo ball soup. I will get it even when I'm not sick. That's how much
you've learned nothing from me in all this time together, Christian. It's that matzo balls, they're for everyone. Yeah. Why should it just be my people who get to eat them? but I thought, you know, that was kind of one of those moments too. I thought that, and the other one that I thought, they had some good quips in there. I like this Spider-Man talking to Spider-Man. Am I always this annoying? Well, yeah. I thought that was great.
No, that was a great moment. I did like that. That's
and it was almost like a throwaway. Like it was actually real small text off to the side, but I that jumped at me. And then also Maria Hill's passcode, I thought was hysterical.
What was her passcode? I don't even know if that was one you sent to me. But
I might not have. Okay, so when she's doing the self destruct, I have it here. The passcode says Maria Hill, Socrates Bologna Sandwich, Soupy Sales, Cameron Crowe.
Oh yeah.
And I was so fascinated by that
Cameron Crowe combination
and Soupy Sales. One of the two would have been plenty, but having both is that's special.
Right. No, I definitely agree. Cam Egan referencing that I wanted Mike Coulter to wear the 70s Luke Cage outfit. He did for a second when they have the flashback of when he got out of the prison. But yeah, I know. The headband is the real thing from there. For our visual audience, we're sharing another image from the Savage Land, which is different than the one I had earlier, because these are always the great, you know, when you have the double splash page of, you know, all the heroes. And, you know, printing is so much better than it used to be, because when I was a kid, let me tell you, the double splash page, it never lined up quite right. And it was like, oh, this would look really cool if they'd been able to, you know, actually print it. And of course, it was printed on like newsprint and, you know, the colors weren't as good, but oh boy, thinks we liked it. We liked it fine. But yeah, I think that just some of the characters that we get, Sentry's not someone that I know as well, but I think he sort of factored into Civil War, but in the way where they tried to kind of keep him out of it, you know, because Civil War, I think, didn't work with the most powerful characters in the Marvel Universe being a part of it. It's like how in the movie they came up with a reason for Thor to not be there, because you felt like in the movie, well, if whichever side Thor ended up on would be the one that won, you know? Mm-hmm. And referencing Civil War, it is an interesting thing in the way this ends, where Tony's like, oh, Thor, thanks for coming back. And he's like, oh, bro, I still hate you. You know, I don't know. We're not boys. We're not down. You know, I don't know what you thought this was, but, you know, and some of those complicated interpersonal interactions, I thought were fun to read. So how does sort of revisiting this, Garrett, you know, thinking about the 15 years in the Marvel Universe since this, obviously nobody reads everything, nobody keeps up on all the stories, but you know, they've had big events. What do you think about sort of this snapshot in history and some of the things that it sets up, you know, the fact that it's continuing on in the themes from Civil War, for example?
I really enjoyed it. You know, at the time Bendis was, you know, there's always these times in the comic book industry where there is one writer who kind of, since they have so many books and they're putting out so much work, they kind of direct the line. So this was Bendis's time when he was at the height of his powers at Marvel and he was directing the line. So he was doing Secret Invasion. Right after this, he was writing the Dark Avengers book during Dark Reign, which is a very, very fun comic book run where you have members of the Thunderbolts and some other not great people pretending to be superheroes. You have Wolverine's son Dawkins being the new Wolverine. You have Matt Gargan being Spider-Man. Like, they're all pretending to be it. Norman Osborn becomes the Iron Patriot. And I always enjoyed how there's almost like a trilogy that Bendis creates with Secret Invasion into Dark Avengers. And then it culminates in another event book called Siege, where the Dark Avengers don't like that Asgard is now above Oklahoma. And they don't like that that Thor is just kind of like this tertiary person who's not signing up with them. So they decide, let's just go cripple Asgard. Let's just go sack it. Let's just go take it. And it is, to me, the culmination of a story that begins all the way in Civil War. It is the moment the Marvel Universe finally gets over the Superhuman Registration Act. They put aside their petty differences, and you have Captain America, Steve Rogers, Thor and Iron Man finally shoulder to shoulder fighting again. I think that's a book very much, if you have read Civil War and Secret Invasion, I would seek out reading Siege.
No, I mean, that sounds interesting. And, you know, it does beg the question, why would you put Asgard over Oklahoma? And the only thing I can come up with is proximity to barbecue. I mean,
well, that's know, what, yeah. J. Michael Straczynski, when he brought back Thor, which is the run where there is an issue where Thor just beats the crap out of Iron Man, because he comes back after Civil War and learns, oh, that's what you did while I was dead. And so he beats the crap out of him. And then he just establishes, Asgard had gone through a Ragnarok. And so he restores it, kind of wants to give his Asgardians the same thing that he got out of spending time on Earth. Like, hey, it humbled me. Maybe we don't need to be gods floating off in space. Maybe we can be closer to being people, you know?
Yeah. One of the images you shared, Eric, it's very much sort of from 2008. In fact, there's a T-shirt earlier, and it features Stephen Colbert, which I thought was very funny to have him pop up here. You know, when the media is telling you like everything's going to be okay. And, you know, this is the height of the fictional character Comedy Central Stephen Colbert, not the late show Stephen Colbert. This is like, yeah, I feel like you could co-opt the character version of Colbert. But I think it's funny when they do that. I mean, there's an Avengers from the early 80s where the Avengers go on Late Night with David Letterman, the NBC version of the show. So I like when they like, you know, when the creators are like, yeah, I don't even know if it makes sense, but I'm just going to go ahead and stick it in there. You know, there's definitely, you know, little nods and things that you'll get from time to time. And
I always like, I have to admit, even, you know, when I was a kid and the pop culture references were kind of fewer and farther between, but I enjoy that. I mean, it's the idea of like, well, particularly with Marvel, right? They're in our world basically. They don't, why should they hide that? Like, if you're going to do the news, you know, why not do that? Why not have some recognizable faces? Yeah. But the idea that he's a Skrull, I don't know, that was one of those, like, if they did that on the TV show, maybe not in the tone, or, and I use that word very loosely, with Secret Invasion, the TV show, but,
right,
you know, that might have been a fun moment to actually have Skrulls have already, you know, reached the media.
When you get into TV and the media, then it's like Disney. So then it's like, well, then it's got to be Jimmy Kimmel because that's ABC. So you see, there's already, you're already rewriting the option.
Or you go political, you say it's the own network. Not one of them is human. Not a single one.
Yeah. Look, it's good that it, you know, sometimes these crossover books, like they did one, I can't remember what it was called now. It was like during the pandemic, so the publication got thrown off. It was like with all these plants. It was
Empire.
Good. Yeah. Empire with a Y.
Yes.
Oh, it was, I was like trying to be excited about, you know, cause like, you know, Marvel sees publication briefly. So did DC, you know, in the early onset of the pandemic. And then they figured out, you know, how to get the presses rolling again. And then it was like, that was the big crossover. And I was like, oh boy, I really wish this was better. You know, but that's this didn't have any of those sort of shortcomings because, you know, obviously this had the advent of being done first. You can deal with the Skrulls and, you know, it's a great idea for a threat. You know, I mean, it's you think about the idea of the Skrulls and, you know, just sort of being replaced and just the tip of the iceberg of the amount of science fiction that has dealt with that, you know, from Terminator to the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, you know, just the idea that the people you see aren't necessarily who you think they are, you know, and you know, being able to have it where it's like, yeah, you can't figure it out because, you know, in past interactions with shapeshifters, Wolverine goes, nope, that's not them, you know, and you're like, okay, well, we can't have that, you know. So yeah, look, I was glad to get a chance to read it, and I agree with you, Eric, reading it before the TV series would have just added to the exasperation, you know, with the end result there. But I was glad to get it. You know, and I don't know if there's any more of these images you want to make sure I hit before we wrap things up.
I mean, honestly, it's, you know, one of the things that Garrett, you brought up at the forefront, was like just the art in this, the ink and the illustration, terrific. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment even in there where like Vision gets not like they destroy him, and it's not even like, oh no, Vision's killed. It's like, no, Vision isn't just killed. He is, his head blows up in like five different directions at the same time. And I realized, poor Vision, he's like, I'm sorry to use a wrestling term on you again, Christian, he's a jobber sometimes in the Marvel universe.
I appreciate the wrestling reference.
He gets mauled. Oh, this, look at this poor guy for our radio wireless audience. He's getting shot in every orifice on his head that is available. Like there's something coming in or coming out. So it doesn't leave a shadow of a doubt there's anything left of him. And I'm thinking about, again, what like Thanos did to him in the MCU. It's like, man, this guy can't get a break.
No, it's
killed him twice.
Yeah, it's hard out there for an android, is I believe the way that the phrase goes. Well, I had fun reading this, and I'm glad we got to spend a show talking about it, and I do hope that people find our episode and maybe they revisit Secret Invasion, or perhaps they read it for the first time. Our pal Cammy Egan talking about, I immediately heard Tom Holland, Andrew Garfield, and Tobey Maguire's voices with the Spider-Man banter. Hmm. Yeah, when you get multiple Spideys interacting with each other, I do agree that line of, am I always this annoying? Yes, that is exactly how that interaction should go. We will be back for real. We'll be back next month. We will be doing another installment of Geekscape Book Club on Friday, October 27th. The expectation is that day at the same time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 Pacific. And in the interest of the season, we will be diving into Batman Long Halloween, which Garrett, I believe you've already fetched from your same storage locker where you were able to get
one fell swoop.
Yeah, you just got it all.
One fell swoop.
I have,
and if you want the address of Garrett's comic book haul, please
send me a DM. Don't dox his private collection. Come on,
too much money has been spent.
That falls under the conceit of I've never read it. I have the trade paperback, but I specifically bought it for this show. I thought we were going to do it last year at Halloween time, and I actually don't. I think we did Black Adam, so maybe. Maybe we could have done this one instead. But, we tried to not do the same characters too often. So I'm excited to talk about that then. And a programming note for those watching this either live or in the days after it's posted. Our show, Marvel Movie Talk, we will be back. And we are typically, right now, I was about to say something that would have been a lie. Right now, we're on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. We will be back this upcoming Wednesday, the 27th of September, and we will be spending the whole show with Kenny Johnson, who created, wrote, directed the Incredible Hulk TV series. Geekscape fans may remember that I did a very lengthy sit down with him to talk about the 40th anniversary of the miniseries V. And in that conversation, I told him, I'm like, I'm not even going to touch the Incredible Hulk. I'm going to have to talk to you about it another time. He was very agreeable. So if you've seen that conversation, you know that we'll get some great stories about the Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno Hulk, and looking forward to that. And our show that I just referenced, Marvel Movie Talk, will be on Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, beginning with the premiere of Loki. So we'll be on Fridays during those 6 weeks. So you can find us there. And since I'm doing my plugs, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. And Garrett, where can people find you and tell them about some of the other content that you work on?
So you can find me on most things. I mostly just use Instagram at this point, but that's just at Garrett Briones. But I also have a podcast. It is called Not Just A Guy Is the Show, about struggling storytellers, myself, and occasionally my guest. Every 2 weeks, I sit down with someone. Going forward, I have a good lineup of guests. We sit down and we talk about the struggles of bringing your story to life, why you want to tell stories, and where you see yourself going as a storyteller in whatever medium it is that you are in. I have a lot of filmmakers coming up because that is the film, that is the medium I'm a part of. So Not Just A Guy, it's on all your podcatchers. It's on YouTube as well. Also Instagram, TikTok at Not Just A Guy Prod, P-R-O-D.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad that we're able to get that out there, let people know about it, and it's always fun to get a chance to chat with you, Garrett. And Eric Connor, where can you be found, sir?
Well, after I find the source of Garrett's powers, his hidden comic book collection, you can find me hanging around Count Eric Connor Instagram and Twitter X. I'll be me and Vision, the remains of Vision's head.
Yeah,
we'll be getting ready for Halloween this year. And Garrett, it was a pleasure sharing a screen with you. Look forward to our next book club.
I can't wait.
And Christian, it was okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
You were there.
No, look, you're not the first to say it. It's okay to get to spend time with me. It's adequate. Every once in a while, it's not terrible. And we take praise in any way that we can get it. Well, we will see everybody on October 29th. Get your copies of Batman Long Halloween so that you can be all caught up in time for that. And if they keep writing them, we'll keep reading them, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye, everybody.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.